Well, greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on regarding marriage licenses right after this. Hey, are you concerned about your privacy? Well, how much does your government know about you, and how much do you want your government to know about you? Well, government only knows as much about you as you tell them about yourself, and everything that government, industry, or business knows about you is because you told them. Now, the Fourth Amendment protects us in our persons, houses, papers, and effects, but it doesn't protect us from ourselves. Now, can we have privacy in the computer age? Well, you bet we can. Information is gathered and stored in a very reasoned and a very logical manner for later retrieval and use. And it's knowing how much information is gathered and what information is being stored and what information you want to keep personal and private that actually puts you in the driver's seat in your quest for privacy. So always keep in mind that no one knows anything about you that you haven't revealed by your own hand or your own mouth. Now, if you'd like to learn more about privacy and privacy issues, why don't you call and ask for our free General Law CD package. That's a four-hour program. It's entertaining, it's informational, it's educational, and best of all, it's free. And you can call and order one right now. Just call the law school and ask for it. The number's 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click on to the email and send us an email request for that free General Law CD package. Once more, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we've been talking about this thing of marriage licenses. A young woman called, actually wrote us an email here, and she asked some questions here about the marriage license. And she said that to add to this, my parents are strongly against this idea of not having a marriage license, and they refuse to be a part of it in order to pay for it and without one. Now, mainly because they think that if we were to get a divorce or something were to happen to Nate, I'd be left with nothing. So we've been talking about this thing of, well, what's the benefit that you derive from the marriage license? And then what are the drawbacks or the hang-ups that go with it? So we're up to notification of birth registration. Here in the United States, we have a thing called a birth certificate. And anytime you want to get a driver's license or a passport or you want to enter school or do something, you got to have, you know, a social security number and you got to have your birth certificate. Well, there's no law that requires you to get a birth certificate. No law requires you to get a social security number. So what happens if you don't have them? Well, there's certain social benefits that you can't have. You can't get unemployment insurance and workman's compensation. Many times you can't get a job. There's all kinds of things that you cannot get. So if you want employment, and I always like to ask my students, what in the hell do you want employment for? There's no money in it. And here in America, people, they just fall all over each other. They want to go to college. They want to spend thousands. They go into debt to go to college so that they can get a degree from college so that they can go to work. And there's no money in it. That's the craziest part of the whole process. Well, we rush out and we get a marriage license, which is a three-party limited general partnership with the state. And then we find out that we don't own the child. The child belongs to the state. And then the state can make laws, rules, regulations, and then bind us to those. You know, like you got to get vaccinations for your children, got to pay income tax, and one thing or another, and there's no profit in that. It's good for politicians, it's good for big business, it's good for banks and insurance companies. Hell, I'm not denying that. These bailouts that you see going on, they're wonderful for Bank of America and Citigroup and Morgan Stanley. I don't deny that. What in the hell does it do for Joe Sixpack and Sally Housewife? They're talking about the housing mortgage crisis over here. So they give trillions of dollars to the banks that made the loans that went upside down, and they never gave a dime to anybody with a mortgage that's in default that really needs the money. So, again, they're just scams upon scams upon scams, and evidently the people like it. They keep buying more of it. And I'm not here to save every fool from his folly. But this young woman, Kim, I presume she's young. Hell, she might be 50 years old. I don't know, but I presume she's young. She's going to get married. And she's engaged, wrote me a letter and said, hey, I can't find much information on this thing of birth certificates. And I said, well, I can come up with 32 reasons why I don't have one. And I'm married to a woman, and she's got 32 reasons why she didn't want one either. And my wife is pretty damn smart. You know, that girl can go shopping all by herself. She can count without even taking her shoes off, for crying out loud. So my wife ain't no dummy, and she didn't want a birth certificate, and she didn't want a marriage license, and she didn't want a driver's license, and she didn't want to get a business license, and she's living her life without any of the above. Does quite nicely there. So this takes us up now to the notification of birth registration, which takes us to an obscure Supreme Court case decided in 1943 called Edwards versus California. And I'm looking at a birth certificate. Here it says United States of America, Department of Commerce, Bureau of the Census, Washington, Notification of Birth Registration. And it says that there's a guy named Wallace Eugene Pedersen, male, and he was born April the 23rd, 1939 in Wolf Point, Montana. And it's got his mother and father's name on here, and then it's signed by a special agent of the Bureau of the Census. Now, while we're talking about census here, I want to point this out. That did you know that taking a census is against the law? Yep, it certainly is. The creator of the universe, when he was talking to Moses out at Mount Sinai, he came up and he said he didn't want anybody taking a census. Now, he took a census. You'll see that in Numbers chapter 1 and 2. He had God, you know, the creator, he went out and counted these people. He said, I want to take a census. Then he told us, don't you do that. So King David one day, you know, he wanted to figure out how many people were in the kingdom so he could get an army together and go out and conquer and do whatever kings do. And so he went out and took a census, and God got a little ticked off about that, and so he killed 70,000 people. 70,000 people died in that census. Now, our Congress, you know, back in 1787, put together our Constitution, and they came to the conclusion we needed a census every 10 years. And next year, 2010, we're going to have a census. I'm not going to participate in that. Most people are going to, but I'm not going to. And that's because it's against the law. It violates the law of God. So there are times when we have to make decisions. Do you want to obey God, or did you want to obey the state? And that's the gist of the subject matter here of marriage licenses. You've got two gods. You've got the God of the United States, and then you've got the Creator God, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And one God says, well, here's the way I want you to run things. And then the other God says, no, that's not right. Here's the way we want you to do that. And so you and I make a decision. We go to public school, and then they solve your problem for you. They abolish the Ten Commandments. You can't pray, and they threw the Bible out. So you can't have the Scripture, you can't have prayer, and you can't have the Ten Commandments in public school. So I'll tell you that they're on a different wavelength than the Bible. Now, the Bible advocates patriarchal marriage. No birth certificates. No contracts with foreign and alien gods like Missouri, New York, California, Germany, France, and so on. And so you and I are sitting down here on planet Earth, and you and I have to make these decisions. And here's a decision for this young woman. She's going to have to decide, well, should I get a marriage license or not? So everybody around her says, oh, yes, get a marriage license by all means. And then there's not much material out there on the subject matter. You don't learn this in college or high school, no? They don't tell you this. Hell, you don't learn this in law school. Lawyers come here. They never heard this before. I tell them, well, why don't you go look it up? Why don't you go and pick up the dictionary over there and look up a license, see what the hell it is. Now, here's the thing that's so strange about this notice of birth registration. It's issued by the Department of Commerce. Now, when you were born in Montana in 1939, you didn't get this. You got one that was issued by the state of Montana or by the county, like mine said, Humboldt County, California. And then later, they created a Bureau of the Census or a Department of Vital Statistics, I think they call it in California now, down in Sacramento. And so that's where they keep these birth registrations and this birth information. These are important documents. Well, they're important documents for the state. I don't know that I need one. I can live forever without a birth certificate. It's the state that needed to identify me. State needed to identify their chattel property. Remember, we learned last time, you're owned by the state. All right, now, here's what happened in 1943. A guy by the name of Edwards is living in Texas, and he wants to move to California to get higher welfare benefits. And so he moves to California. Now, the Californians ain't dummies, and so they had laws. This actually happened about 1938, but the case was decided in 43. Finally, it wound its way through the process. And so California arrests this guy and prosecutes him, you know, for moving to California to get higher welfare benefits, and they had a statute that says thou shalt not do that. So as a result of that, the case goes to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court divides 5-4, 5-4 decision, and Justice Douglas wrote a blistering dissent, and he said, we've reached the right conclusion that Edwards has a right to move to California, and he has a right to collect these higher welfare benefits. But he said, we have reached the right conclusion, but for all of the wrong reasons. And so he said, the idea that this guy Edwards is an article in commerce is false. He has a right under Article 42 of Magna Carta to do this. See, going back and forth. But the majority opinion said, no, Edwards was an article in commerce and regulated under the Commerce Clause at Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution. The plot thickens here. And then when you're born and you get your birth certificate, they send a copy off here in the Department of Commerce, the Census Department, tucks this away in their files. Article of Commerce? That's right. See, when you're shipping a cow from Texas to California, that cow is an article in commerce. When you get on a Greyhound bus in Dallas, Texas, and ride to Sacramento, California, you're an article in commerce. Now, if you want to be reduced to an article in commerce, get after it. I took a look at that, and I said, no, I don't think I want to do that. I think I'm a little bit higher than a cow in commerce. So I didn't want to pass that one on. Remember, I said there's 32 reasons why. There's no. Now let's take a look at the Idaho Birth Certificate Worksheet for Parents. Listen to this. Please note that the inclusion of parent social security numbers is required as a part of Public Law 100-485. This information is strictly confidential and may be released to the Idaho Child Support Agency if an official child support action regarding this child has been initiated. Ah, plot thickens a little bit more. You got marriage license, birth certificate, and social security. The three work together. And what's happening here is that when you get your social security account number, you declare yourself to be incompetent and unable to manage your affairs, applying to the federal government for a guardian ward relationship. You do the same thing when you get a birth certificate. The parents are saying, in effect, my God, we can't feed, clothe, and house this child. We got to have a guardian to help us do that. Now, you got a license. So the state licensed you. It's kind of like having a boy and a girl in a mental hospital who are totally incompetent. So the institution licenses the two to breed so that they can produce offspring. But obviously, they're incompetent and unable to raise, handle, and take care of these children. So the mental hospital lets the mother nurse the baby, lets the father, you know, bounce it on its knee from time to time, rock it to sleep in the chair. But the ownership and the custody and the care and the direction of the education and the health care of the child is in the hands of the institution. And that's all you've got here with the United States of America, or California, Washington, Oregon, and Texas. You've got 300 million Americans who have all declared themselves to be legally incompetent and unable to manage their affairs, who have applied to government for a guardian ward relationship in which the state assumes the role of the guardian, and the people are in the role of the ward. It's a guardian ward relationship. So when there's a custody dispute or there's a child support dispute over here, the guardian comes in and says, well, here's the way we solve the problem. This is why you don't have jury trials. What the hell do you need a jury trial for? We've got a judge, we've got a contract in force, we've got licensing. These people are wards of the state, they're incompetent, declared themselves to be incompetent, so we're directing them. We're sending social lady out to tell them how to raise the kid. If you need that, Kim, well, then sign up for it. And I didn't need it, and so I didn't. Well, at least not the second time. Not first time I did. The first time I married, I had a marriage license, and I had all the bells and whistles that go along with it. Didn't work well for me, and so I decided the second time around I'd do without it. Now, here's a letter from the Department of Social Services dated October the 20th, 1986, directed at a fellow named Randy Fry. Fry was a student here back in the 80s, and he had a little boy, and he was homeschooling him. And he received this letter one day from Sherry Salmonson, and she was from the Department of Social Services, and it was St. Joseph County, Michigan, Department of Social Services, 615 East Main Street. Centerville, Michigan, 49032. Okay. Now, here's the letter. It says, Dear Mr. and Mrs. Fry, this is to inform you that there has been a complaint filed with the Children's Protective Services stating that your son Robert is not attending school because you have not enrolled him and you do not choose to have him attend. Well, I contacted the Sturgis Public Schools and found that Robert was not enrolled and that you had been contacted about this matter. Now, I'm told that you reported that Robert is enrolled in another school, but that you refused to state what that school was. Now, please be informed that Michigan law requires that children 6 years and older must receive an education in an accredited program. It is your right to select the program, but it must meet the requirements of the law. If you refuse to comply with the law, you may be subject to prosecution or to charges of child neglect. Now, I attempted recently to visit you at your home to discuss this matter, but I found no one at home. Please contact me by phone or letter to let me know if the above information is incorrect and to verify your son's attendance in an approved program. If you have questions about your legal responsibilities or your choices, I'd be happy to discuss these with you. Now, please contact the Children's Protective Services Unit at 467-6311 by Friday, October the 24th, to verify Robert's attendance or to set up an appointment to discuss the matter. If we do not hear from you by that date, we will initiate legal action. Sincerely, Sherry Salmonson. All right, now, there's the letter that every parent dreads. Oh, my God, it's social lady. And they're going to take my kid and put him in a foster home and take him away from me or do all these bad, wicked, terrible, awful things. And this is what motivates people to get marriage licenses and birth certificates and send them to public school and shut your mouth and sit down and so on. Yeah, if you want to do that, that's fine. I'm not opposed to that. I'm not sitting here telling you I want to save you, you know, from social lady. But Randy wrote him a letter back. And in the letter that he wrote back, he said, look, my son, Robert, does not have a birth certificate, and my wife and I do not have a marriage license. He had some other things to say, but that was essentially it. And he said, sincerely, Randy Fry, patriarch of the family. Now, he's a patriarch of his family. Didn't have a marriage license now. He's practicing patriarchal marriage. He gets a letter back on November the 13th. Now, remember, Sherry Salmonson wrote him a letter, and it was October the 20th. He wrote a letter back. And on November the 13th, now it's 3 weeks, that's all it took, just 3 weeks, and he gets a letter back with one sentence in it, just one sentence, and it says, Dear Mr. Fry, upon a review of your case, the St. Joseph County Department of Social Services has determined that we will not be proceeding with our investigation. Sincerely, Sherry Salmonson. Okay, so what's the difference here? What happened? It's not the state's kid. That's all that happened. It's not the state's kid. The state of Michigan does not educate Fry children. It only educates Michigan children. State of Texas, same thing. Now let's go back to Joe Fillmore. Remember Joe told you about last time? Remember Joe, the little eight-year-old girl? He wants to educate the kid at home. No birth certificate, no shots, okay. No marriage license. Right. So here he wakes up one day and he says, hey, I changed my mind. I want to send my kid to public school. So he takes the kid down to public school to enroll her. And they say, well, where's the birth certificate? Don't have one. Well, where's her shot record? Don't have one. Well, you can't enroll this kid. And Joe said, oh, yeah, I can. And so he said, no, listen to this. I'm a taxpayer, and I pay property tax. 75% of my property tax goes to support public education. In addition to that, I pay other taxes. And the state of Kansas collects those taxes, and they support public education. Furthermore, I pay federal taxes. And the federal government supports public education. Now, because of that, the state, in this case the school district, is being unjustly enriched at my expense. And I want my child educated here with my tax dollars. And they said, no, we're not going to do that. And he said, yeah, you're going to do that, but what we don't know is when are you going to do that, before or after the court order is issued. So how do you want to handle it? So they took it into their legal department, and they mulled it over a little bit, and they came back and they said, okay, Mr. Fillmore, here's what we're going to do. We're going to go ahead and educate your child without the birth certificate, without the shot record. Okay. Joe called me, and he told me about it, and I said, well, the legal department of the public school made an error. They cowered. They were intimidated by you. They were afraid to take this issue into court because they did not want a judicial determination. That's what we call stonewalling it. President Nixon famously said, stonewall it. Okay, well, that's what we do. What we're saying is, like Rosa Parks riding the front of the bus, can you imagine where you'd be had the bus driver not had her arrested for riding the front of the bus? You'd still be riding the back. That law had been on the books for 128 years. You have to have a vital controversy at issue under Tennessee Valley Authority. See, that's the key. There's seven requirements to qualify a case for appellate review. Now, the school board over in Coffeyville, Kansas, they took a look at that and they said, we don't want this issue reviewed by the court, so we'll go ahead and educate the kid. Now, they didn't have to. And had that case been litigated, the state Supreme Court would have come back and said, the state of Kansas has no duty to educate any Fillmore kids. We only have a duty to educate Kansas kids. That's what they did not want out in the public domain. So when this young woman, Kim, writes me and says, hey, there's just not much out there. Well, first of all, Kim, you probably didn't know where to go look. And secondly, the people, the powers that be, are doing everything they can to hide this from you. Hell, they don't want you to know and understand what your rights, duties, and obligations are. If you understood this, you might make some different decision, which costs $56 a day. We don't want that. We just want you to pay your $56 a day and educate your children with free education for all children in public school. And I want to remind you that the American school system is the most expensive system in the world at $56 a day on average per child educated in your public school. If you educate your child at home with a homeschooling program, it will cost you on average $543 per child per year. Huh? Huh? Did you get that? Write it down. Write down $543 home education and write down $10,000 underneath it. Now, if you want the third number in here, if you send your kid down to the local Catholic school, on average, it's $2,400 a year. Now, the Catholics, for some reason, can educate a kid for $2,400 a year, and when he gets through with his education, he'll be able to read his diploma. I have never heard of a parochial school that turned out a functionally illiterate child. There may be some, but I've never heard of one. And your kid, when he comes out of the parochial school, will score at the 80th percentile. And when he goes to homeschool, he'll score at the 86th percentile. When he goes to public school, on average, he'll score at the 50th percentile, unless you put him into an inner-city public school like New Orleans or Washington, D.C., where he will score at the 28th percentile. And by the way, when you educate this kid in Washington or New Orleans, it doesn't cost $10,000 a year. It costs $21,000 a year to educate a child on average in an inner-city public school. Those are called the troubled schools. So the more money you spend on public education, the dumber the kid gets. That's the bottom line. But that isn't what you hear from your politician. You know, when you got a problem in schools, let's throw more money at it. We'll spend more money. The least amount of money spent in education is homeschooling at $543, and your kid, on average, will score at the 86th percentile. The dumbest kids, they spend $21,000 a year on educate them in New Orleans, and they score at the 28th percentile. Come on, folks, wake up. Let's smell the coffee here. When you listen to the politicians and the paid professionals and social aides, they say the reason that these kids are scoring poorly is we don't have enough teachers and the class sizes are too big. Hell, when I went to school, there was 32 kids in the class. And the old lady, 64 years old, was teaching the class. At the end of the year, every kid moved from the third grade to the fourth. Every one of them could read and write. In 1947, boys and girls, Johnny could could read and write. Here's another one. Schools threaten families, says educator and author. Utah County Journal. Here it says, an example of the growing threat posed by government and its schools, Gatto said, can be found in a proposed legislative resolution that he obtained during a recent visit to Wichita, Kansas. In part, the resolution reads, now here's the resolution. It says, whereas public schools have become the primary institution for the rearing of children and the transmission of values, and whereas families, churches, and other social institutions are no longer able to successfully fulfill these responsibilities, therefore, public schools should be the principal caregiving institution in this state and shall henceforth exercise final decision-making authority on all matters regarding the existence, nurture, and upbringing of all children in the state of Kansas. Boys and girls, by interstate compact, that's carried out in every state in the Union, here in the United States. Listen to this again. The final decision-making authority on all matters regarding the existence, nurture, and upbringing of all children resides with the state. You know, that same state that runs a whorehouse in Nevada, performs 2.5 million abortions a year, and then graduates 3 million students out of high school that can't read, they're functional illiterates, and they call this the moral anchor of civil society. And you want to participate in that, huh, Kim? Huh? Don't let me get in your way, for crying out loud. There's another reason why. Hospitals collect a new baby tax over here. This is from the Sioux City Journal, July 5th, 1986. Iowa passed a law that you have to get a birth certificate when you have your child in the hospital. We got a law here, see? And then they put a tax on that, see? I forgot how much, $100, I think, was the tax. That was another reason why you ought to have your babies at home and you ought to stay the hell away from the birth certificates and marriage licenses. Now, let's get up here to interracial marriage. Remember I said last night, I said, now, the reason why you have to have a marriage license is because of interracial marriage. Now, the other day I was watching some videotapes here, and there's a guy by the name of Kent Hovind. And Kent Hovind's a pretty famous guy. He's in jail now for not paying his taxes, income tax evasion. But he was a Baptist preacher, and he has a big outfit down, I don't know, Tallahassee, Florida, or someplace like that. And he's a great teacher, a hell of a nice guy. And he puts out videotapes on evolution and creation, one thing and another. And he's a pretty smart boy, smarter than I am. And I don't deny it. Well, anyway, he was on this videotape, and he said, I can't find any place in the Bible that would prohibit or discourage interracial marriage. And I thought, what am I hearing here? This guy has been to college, he's been to seminary, he's married, has children, he's a preacher, makes millions of dollars a year, has a big outfit. I presume he's read the Bible. I don't know that positively, but I would presume he has. I mean, when I say read the Bible, there's 1189 chapters, 66 books. I would presume that he started in Genesis 1:1 and finished up in Revelation 22, and he read it all at least once, you know, just guessing. I did. I'm just a plumber. I read it once, cover to cover, read the whole thing. And I can find nine places in the Bible that tells you do not interracially marry. Let me give you a couple of three. Ezra chapter 9, verses 1 through 5. Ezra 9, verses 10, or verse 10. Ezra 9, verses 14 through 19. Ezra 9, verse 44. Nehemiah 13, verses 23 through 27. Deuteronomy 7, verses 1 through 4. Huh? How about Deuteronomy 25, Numbers 36? Now, I'm just a plumber, and I'm not an expert by any stretch of the imagination, but I'm not brain dead. And I would submit to you that if you read these same scriptures, you'd come to the same conclusion that I did. And that is that marrying strange women is against the law, and that's why we need a marriage license, and that's why marriage licenses came into vogue clear back in the Middle Ages. Now, in modern times, marriage licenses are derivative of the 14th Amendment enacted in 1868, and Illinois was the first state to start the marriage license program on a wide scale, statewide scale, in 1876. Illinois started the ball rolling. Marriage licenses weren't common in 1900. By 1920, they were very common. Today, they're universal. They don't have to be. There's no law that requires you to get one. But the purpose is interracial marriage. Now, the real purpose behind it has nothing to do with the Bible and interracial marriage. It has to do with control of the family. Nothing more, nothing less. Families are very, very profitable enterprises, and the state wants to cut into that business. And education is the number one business of marriage, and it produces $500 billion a year in revenue for just the education portion of the marriage program by itself. And then there's welfare. My God, there are literally millions of public employees engaged in welfare. Welfare is a part and parcel of patriarchal marriage. Education is a part and parcel of patriarchal marriage. And the state says, well, how do we cut in on this patriarchal marriage converted over to civil law marriage so that we can cut in on education? We can cut in on welfare. And they have. In fact, here in the United States, we have what we call discretionary and non-discretionary funding in our public budgets. The non-discretionary funding, that is the fixed funding for things like education and welfare, amount to more than half of the money spent. In the state of Idaho, for instance, 75% of every tax dollar that is spent in the whole state goes to education. That's the purpose for marriage license, is to give government a one-third interest in the child so that we can legislate, so that we can get control of the child. Hell, that kid's valuable. And then we give him free public education. How is that free public education paid for? By taxes. Taxes. All right, so we sign up for it and we get what we sign up for. All right, now there's a case called Reynolds versus United States. Now the government gets involved in this and they say they want to get involved in morality. See? And so they outlawed polygamy. Let me give you your mid-course reminder here and then we'll come back and take a look at polygamy as a part of this marriage program. You're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from a scriptural perspective. That's 8 schools and all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact desk, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. And it has a radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order one by calling and asking for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. 67. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. The Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that the authors and publications that we endorse and recommend are necessarily going to reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour and editorial review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine. They're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertiser, sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. So if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, now our young bride-to-be, Kim, asked, how could I be protected? Well, the protection that you get from patriarchal marriage is pretty all-encompassing. And the reason for that is that all females under the Mosaic Law have to be taken care of from the cradle to the grave. So all of you women out there have to be taken care of, cared for. And that lasts from the day you're born to the day you die. And so the way that works is that you're born, and then your daddy is your guardian, and your daddy is your owner. Instead of being owned by the state of Texas, it's your daddy that owns you. And under patriarchal marriage, a boy wants to marry. He comes over to your daddy. He doesn't come to you. He comes to your daddy and says, hey, I'd like to marry your daughter. And your daddy says, okay, well, there's a little matter of the bride price. And so they negotiate the bride price. And so he says, your daddy says, I want $100,000 for my daughter. And he's going to sell you, Kim. Your daddy's going to sell you to Nate. See? Sounds kind of wild, doesn't it? Now, can you remember a story when you went to Sunday school? There was a fellow by the name of Jacob, and he had an uncle by the name of Laban. He got a little rambunctious at home, stole his brother's birthright, and he had to take it on the lamb. And so Jacob split, and he goes over to his uncle's place. And while he's at his uncle's place, his uncle's got a couple of daughters there. Actually, they're Jacob's cousins with them. And one of them's name is Rachel. And he goes up to Laban, and he says, my God, that woman's beautiful. I really like her. I'd like to marry her. And so his uncle Laban says, well, okay, here's the price. And Jacob, you know, he's just flat-ass broke. Can't get any money. He's on the lamb, you know. And so he says, well, I don't have any money. What can we work out? And so they worked out a deal where Jacob would work for 7 years for this girl. 7 years. All right, so let's figure that out. Let's suppose that Jacob is working 5 days a week, 8 hours a day, 40-hour week, which isn't true. You know, when you work on a farm, you work 12 hours a day, at least 6 days a week, even if you take the Sabbath off. And I'm assuming Jacob did that. But we'll just go with the lower number here. It's 5 days a week times 8 hours a day. That's 40 hours a week times 52 weeks in the year. That's 2,080 hours a year times 7 years is 14,560 hours in a year times $5 an hour is $72,800. Jacob paid $72,800 bare minimum for that girl. It's called a bride price. Then he got another one. I assume he paid the same amount, $140,000 for a pair of them. That's quite a bit of money. How much is Nate offering for you, Kim? What's your bride price? Because what you're going to find out here is that there's no need to buy a cow that you get the milk free from. And you're going to find out that if somebody pays something, it's more valuable than if they get it free. I can tell you that from personal experience. I went to Sale Barn one time, and I paid a bunch of money for a bull. Oh, my God, I took good care of that bull. I mean, I fed him and clothed him and took care of him and put him in the barn, fed him grain. And I've got some bulls here on the place. They're born here. There's rain, and there's thunder, and there's snow and ice, and there's lightning. And do I bring them in the barn? Hell no. I leave them out in the field. They can fend for themselves. You go to the Sale Barn, you pay $5,000, $10,000, $15,000 for a breeding bull. By God, you're going to take good care of him. When Nate pays $72,000 for you, Kim, $72,000, I'll guarantee you he will take a hell of a lot better care of you than he will if he gets you for nothing. So I just thought I'd throw that in there for your consideration. Now, here's what marriage is. Remember, a civil law marriage is a three-party limited general partnership among the boy, the girl, and the state. It's an agreement or a contract for, among, or between these three parties, as evidenced by the marriage license. A common law marriage is a two-party contract between the boy and the girl. There may be a written instrument, but it isn't necessary. The marriage is done by agreement and penetration. Did you get that? Listen up now. Here's what marriage is. Marriage is agreement and penetration. Without both, there is no marriage. Got that? And you can add anything on to that that you want, and it doesn't add any more to the marriage or take anything away from it. That's all marriage is. Two things. It's an agreement and penetration. Now, many states recognize common law marriage. Not all. Tennessee is one that doesn't, but many do. And property and children by the birth certificate of the parties. And it's very little different than the civil law marriage. In most states where common law marriage, for instance, Texas recognizes common law marriage. And when you get married in Texas, common law, you'll typically get a birth certificate for your children. You might as well have got a marriage license. You haven't improved yourself a bit. You could, but you probably didn't. Now, a patriarchal marriage, listen up here, here's number three. Here's a patriarchal marriage, is a contract between the boy and the girl's father. Doesn't include you at all, Kim. Isn't that special? And you're going to get married? You're not even a party to the contract. The female is the object of the contract. The father gives the girl to the boy in a public ceremony, and he transfers his liability to the boy. In Hebrew law, a female must be taken care of from the cradle to the grave. The contract terminates upon consummation. So there's a contract for delivery of the goods. The female is the goods to be delivered. That's why the father of the bride walks the bride down the aisle. In a public ceremony, he gives that liability. See, that female has to be taken care of from the cradle to the grave. Kim, wake up. You're an adult now. The law requires that your father feed you, clothe you, and house you until you die. And your daddy is sitting there saying, how can I get rid of this liability? Now, along comes this young man, Nate, and he's sitting there. He's got all these body fluids flowing around through him, coursing through his body, and he needs a female. See, he needs a wife. And so he'd like very much to have a wife. That's an asset to him. It's a liability to your daddy. And so the guy that wants the asset has to buy it. And so he goes up to the daddy. He says, hey, Dad, I'd like to marry your daughter. This isn't a deal that includes you. Come on, Kim. You're the object. When I want to buy a cow, I go down to the Sale Barn, and the auctioneer auctions off the cow. The cow isn't contracting with me. I'm contracting between the owner, the Sale Barn, and myself. The cow is not a party to the action. Got that? Now, you can sit there and rant and rave, jump up and down, paw the ground, bite the bushes, and get all upset if you want to. Hell, I didn't make it this way. I'm just a reporter. I'm just here telling you. That's the way it is. You don't see anybody walking down the aisle giving the groom away, do you? Where in the hell do these customs come from? They're a part and parcel of Anglo-Saxon administration. That's what it is. Comes from the law of Moses. Hell, this goes back to Mount Sinai. And then if you want to get a little bit more technical, it goes all the way back to the Garden of Eden. Hell, this came from God himself. Now, I said I was going to tell you about polygamy here. I'm coming to it now. Just don't panic. You see, since the female is the object here of this marriage contract, the contract terminates upon consummation. So we go to Matthew 5, verses 31-32, where we're confronted with this thing called fornication. This is why it's against the law to have sexual relations prior to marriage. It's called fornication. Now, in some cases, it can be adultery, but it's fornication prior to marriage. So when the 16-year-olds are out here hooping and hollering and having a good time breeding, we call that fornication. Now, when you do that, we have damaged goods. And it's the only basis for an annulment. You can get divorced for any cause or reason, but an annulment can only be affected, and females have this thing called a hymen, see? And we'll know whether you've had sexual relations prior to marriage based upon the blood that's on the rag that can be presented as evidence after the consummation has taken place. See how that game is played? Now, if your new husband, Nate, finds out that you have been having sexual relations prior to marriage, he goes back to your daddy and say, hey, we got a fraud here. Take this girl back. Give me back my money. Deal's off. And that's the end of that argument. Now, if on the other hand, Nate were to say, well, let me try her out for a month. see how it works out. Then he comes back a month later, the doctrine of latches overtakes him. He failed to exercise the right timeline. He knew about this fraud early on, you know, like on the wedding night. And then he didn't take prompt, evasive action to identify the fraud. So the doctrine of latches comes in, and now he's stuck with you, like it or lump it. He can still divorce you, but he's got to now give you a bill of divorce. Now, with a bill of divorce, what do? Well, you go back to your father's house. The question that you raised is, well, what happens if Nate dies or divorces me? You go back to your father's house. See how that works? Very simple. I had a daughter like that. She went out and got married. She ended up getting divorced, and so where does she go? Well, remember, a female has to be taken care of from the cradle to the grave. She came back to her father's house. And so now I've got my liability back. Got rid of her once. Now she comes back, but it's even worse than that. Now she's got a little girl. She's got a child. Now, a virgin is worth more money than a divorced woman with a child. So I went to work, and I found her another husband. Actually, she found another husband herself, but I interviewed him, and then I sold her again to the second guy. Now, the second husband over here was a doctor. She married well. And there was a thing here called a bride price. Now, let me read to you the bride price here from her second marriage. It says here that George Gordon and Dr. Reading have agreed upon the price of the bride. The consideration paid is one covered horse trailer, one six-year-old Arabian gelding horse, one two-year-old registered quarter horse stud, four registered quarter horse mares, 16 and two-thirds pounds of 3/9 fine silver, and 1 pound of 4/9 fine gold, with one Ford 8N tractor and implements. Now, that was her bride price. Now, once I was paid the bride price by the groom, I turned around and gave the bride price to my daughter as a dowry. See, girls have things called dowries. That's her inheritance. Now, when a female leaves home, she takes her inheritance with her because she changes her name. Her inheritance now changes to her husband's name, and her inheritance is now with her husband's family. And this is why we say, oh, she married well. You ever heard that statement? My old granny used to say that quite often. Oh, she married well. Or sometimes she'd say, oh, she married poor white trash. Poor white trash, what my granny used to say. Okay, well, you know, this daughter of mine here, she married a doctor and did pretty well. This bride price, by the way, was about $32,000 in 1990 when it was put together. These animals and all the rest, about $32,000. Today, it'd be worth probably $70,000-$80,000, you know, in today's dollars. That was 1990. All right, now you're starting to get the drift of this, how this works out, and I said I'm going to tell you about Reynolds over here. Now, we have another thing here that adds in here called polygamy. A guy named Reynolds marries two women. And Congress comes up with a statute in 1876, and they say, thou shalt not have two wives. This was an obvious move against the Mormons out in Utah. And so Reynolds has got two wives. They prosecute him, and the case goes to trial. Now, the court comes back 7-0. In those days, they had seven justices. They had seven judges, and they said, hey, this guy's guilty. He appealed it clear to the U.S. Supreme Court. And he says, hey, this is religion. This is religious free exercise. It comes under the First Amendment. And the court says, no, it doesn't. Now, to this day, you send a kid to the Harvard Law School, and the professor will say this was an obvious case of discrimination against Mormons. And God, it was terrible. All of the opinion, all of the commentaries tell you this Reynolds case was just so grossly anti-Mormon and anti-religion that it just sucks. Had nothing to do with religion. What happened here was Reynolds pled into a fiction of law. All you lawyers out there, it's what happened to him. He pled into a fiction of law. He pled not guilty. Here was the charge. It says you're in violation of statute 22404. That is, you have two wives. You're practicing polygamy. And he was unable to plead out of the fiction of law. And to do that, all he had to do was walk in and say, hey, listen, I don't have a marriage license with either one of these women. Because the government's witness, the star witness against him, was also a polygamist. And they asked him, are you a polygamist? And he said, no. And he said, well, are you having sexual relations with more than one woman? And the government star witness said, yeah. And then the government, the U.S. attorney said, well, what do you call that? And he said, fornication. He was practicing fornication. Hell, there isn't any law in the United States against fornication. God is opposed to fornication, but not the state. Hell, the state doesn't care if you've got a mistress. The state doesn't care if you're going down to Flo's whorehouse. They don't care anything about morality. A government that runs a whorehouse and Mustang Ranch isn't concerned about morality, kids. The government is concerned about commerce. And a polygamous family is equivalent to a corporation. That's what the bitch is. It's a corporation. And so a polygamist who has five wives and 15 sons, and 15 sons are running 15 businesses, what we have here is a vertically integrated patriarchal family. The objection that the government has to polygamy has nothing to do with morality. It has to do with commerce. That's why they've outlawed polygamy. But they have legalized corporations. And so today you have Chase Manhattan Bank, corporation. Bank of America, corporation. Hell, they can go to government, and government will bail them out and give them trillions of dollars. No problem with that. God help you nitwits out there if you've got two wives. And the polygamists, of which there's about 30,000 Mormon polygamists that are active here in the United States, those polygamists almost invariably will go out and get marriage licenses, which violates the statute. Now you bring yourself into a regulated enterprise. And so now they prosecute you for polygamy. Well, of course, you've got a contract that says thou shalt not practice polygamy. Nobody's concerned about having two wives. I have a number of students that are polygamists and they have wives. Two, three, five wives. I had one student one time, his daddy had five wives and 34 children, of which he was number 26. The problem that the daddy had was he had marriage licenses with all of these women. That's so that they can go in and get welfare benefits. Well, the state isn't going to sit still for that. And so that's the bitch. Government wants to control and regulate welfare and education, the two biggest industries that come from families. They do not want polygamy because it interferes with their control over corporations and commerce. All right, so now they come along with a licensing program. And you get a license so that you can marry the state's daughter because mom and dad gave the child to the state. We saw that with the Attorney General Jim Maddox. And yes, the state owns the girl. So if you want the girl, you got to go to the state and get the state's license to marry the state's girl. And that's because mom and dad passed their seed through the fire to Moloch in violation of Leviticus 20 verses 1 through 5. And now the state has the child. So if you want to marry a woman in this country, you got to go to the government to get her. How do you like that? So William Bendix would say, what a revolting development this has turned out to be. I'm out of time here, boys and girls. We'll conclude this next time on the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Meanwhile, you've been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact desk, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly and has a radio log schedule and archives. And all of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Hey, time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night.